He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
And welcome. So nice to have you with us on this Saturday in the Upper Midwest. We appreciate you making Faith Radio part of your weekend. Many people believe their genetics or their brain chemistry doom them to a life of emotional pain. Moods descend on them like a dark cloud, and they are stuck with the miserable feelings until a wind stirs up to blow the gloom away. Thinking they're helpless, they passively suffer and simply live with the misery or look solely to medication for relief. Those are the opening words of the book, Take Charge of Your Emotions, by Dr. Linda Soley, who will be our guest here on Faith Radio this hour. And if you or someone you know has been struggling with depression or anxiety, let me encourage you to stick around for the next 45 minutes, because Dr. Soley will have just, I believe, some real solid, godly advice, solid from both a biblical perspective and from a psychological perspective, that will help you or maybe a loved one. In fact, if you know somebody who maybe right now is in the depths of depression or really struggling with anxiety or panic attacks, why not encourage them to tune in to Faith Radio in the next few minutes? And Linda will offer, I believe, some just great counsel. Before we introduce Linda, though, as you know, each week we take a look at some of the faith and culture-related stories in the news and try to respond to your emails. I saw this story, which is really encouraging to me. A new feature film about Jesus, Son of God, is going to be opening in theaters next Friday. And it turns out that pastors across the U.S. are jumping on board a campaign to spread the gospel through this movie. Churches around the country are working to buy out multiplex cinema screens for the film's premiere on Thursday night. Even though it officially opens on Friday, I guess they're having the special one showing on Thursday evening. And at last count, multiplexes in at least 10 cities across the country are going to be playing Son of God on all of their screens this coming Thursday night. All of their, can you imagine? You drive by one of those multiplexes and every screen it says Son of God, Son of God, Son of God. Kind of hard to miss that on the sign. Rick Warren, who of course is the pastor of Saddleback Church in Southern California, he has his church has bought out screens in at least 8 different theaters in Orange County, California. He says, "I've seen most of the films about Jesus produced in the past 50 years, and Son of God is the best. We're excited. Jesus is back on the big screen, and we are going to fill the theaters. I want every other faith leader in America to do the same. Whether you can buy out a whole theater or just one screen, now is the time to show up." And one of the reasons they're doing this, of course, is to spread the good news, but another reason is to send a strong message to Hollywood that when they make films, quality films or release films, this, of course, is a quality film. It's made by the same producers of the TV miniseries, The Bible. And when production companies and big movie houses get behind this, these sort of things, Christians will go. I mean, again, if it's quality film work and it has a compelling story, which, of course, this one does, and when we go and we sell out these theaters, they take notice. The people in Hollywood, now, as you know, a lot of people in Hollywood are pretty antithetical to the Christian faith, but money talks. I hate to put it that way and be blunt, but it does. And we will send a very strong message, if not only if we sell out theaters on Thursday night, but if all of us, in fact, all throughout the Faith Radio listening area in all of our cities, I would encourage you to get a group from your church, maybe encourage your pastor to talk about this from the pulpit tomorrow, and go next weekend. If you can't go Thursday night, go Friday, go Saturday, go Sunday. Opening weekend is the weekend that they really pay attention to in Hollywood. So, by the way, Rick Warren, a pastor of Saddleback, is also going to be doing a sermon series to go along with the movie. He's got a curriculum for a 6-week study for small groups called Son of God, The Life of Jesus in You, which you can learn more about, I believe, at the Son of God movie site. It's just sonofgodmovie.com, sonofgodmovie.com. Or you could probably go to Rick's church's website, Saddleback Church in Southern California. I'm excited about this, if you can't tell. Well, we do get emails here at Faith Radio, and we love to connect with you via email and through our website, myfaithradio.com. Just go to my show page, click on the contact link, and shoot me an email. Heard from Kristen in Bloomington, Minnesota, and she writes this: Dear Dr. Bill, a few weeks ago, I heard you say it's not a good idea for couples to live together before marriage. Why is this important if both people have a faith in Jesus, respect each other, and have good morals and values? Well, Kristen, that is a great question. And I did mention that a lot of couples today, even Christian couples, believe that living together is a good way to find out if they're compatible, sort of a test drive that will improve their chances for a successful marriage. And while this seems to make sense, actually just the opposite is true. In fact, research indicates that couples who cohabit, who live together before marriage, have a 50 to 80% higher divorce rate than those who don't. That is stunning to me. We already have a huge divorce rate in the United States, as you know, but if you live together before marriage, you really, really increase your chances for divorce and torpedoing your marital relationship. Now, not only that, couples who live together before marriage also have higher rates of domestic violence. They are more likely to be involved in affairs, to be unfaithful to each other. And get this, if a cohabiting couple gets pregnant, there is a very high likelihood that the man will leave the relationship within 2 years, resulting in a single mom raising a fatherless child. Now, that's the research side of things. Let's talk about the faith side of things. You mentioned that you're a Christian, you have faith of Jesus. It's really important for you to know, Kristen, that the Bible has some very specific things to say about sex outside of marriage. Sexuality is a marvelous, marvelous gift that God has given us, but he clearly tells us it's to be expressed within the context of marriage, and there are a bunch of different scriptures that address this issue. When we venture outside of God's design, his perfect will in this area, the consequences can be really, really painful. And I can tell you, Kristen, I've known a lot of people who have tried this, and unfortunately, it's left a lot of emotional scars. So I would just encourage you and your boyfriend, if you're really serious about your Christian faith, I would encourage you to remain sexually pure until marriage. And if you are already living together, you need to know, frankly, I can't sugarcoat this, God considers that sin. And since you describe yourself as a Christian, I would really urge you to take seriously what he tells us in his word about marriage, the sanctity of marriage. And let me recommend a great book to Kristen, and I'd recommend this book to anyone who is single and considering marriage, dating, even to parents who maybe have adult kids who are considering living together. This book, I think, is one of the best from a Christian perspective on this topic, and it's called Before You Live Together by Dr. Dave Gudgel. Before You Live Together by Dr. David Gudgel. So, anyway, Kristen, thanks so much for writing. We really appreciate you. And we'll all be praying for you, too, that you will find God's will and make the right decisions in this very important issue. It's 12 minutes past 11 o'clock. I'm Bill Meyer, and coming up next, our special guest, Dr. Linda Soli, as she talks about emotions. How do we get a hold of them? How do we take charge of them? Man, oh, man, so many of us struggle. Even I struggle with emotions at times. And we're going to get some practical help from Linda coming up next here on the Faith Radio Network.
If I interpret accurately the sentiment today among many dedicated parents, they are sick of the filthiness of the popular culture, and most of them resent the effect it's having on the young. What's occurring now in television sitcoms, in rap and R&B lyrics, and in many movies is outrageous. To bring innocent children into the world, fresh from the hand of the Creator, and then to corrupt their young minds and mouths so thoroughly within a single decade is unconscionable. Having taught and counseled public school children in the 60s, when a student could get suspended or sent home for spewing dirty words or making sexual gestures, it is deeply disturbing to me to walk on a campus today and hear kids, not just the troublemakers, but the majority of students, cursing like sailors. We as adults ought to be ashamed of ourselves for letting it happen. We seem not to even hear the references to gross sexuality and bodily functions that used to shock our parents. We have acquiesced to things that embarrassed us in front of our kids because it was too much trouble to explain why we choose to live decent and wholesome lives in our families. We can do better without being prudes or fuddy-duddies. It's called good parental guidance, and it's the least we can do for our kids.
There's more Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson at MyFamilyTalk.com. That's MyFamilyTalk.com.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
And you can join the conversation by giving us a call at 877-93-FAITH. Jot that down if you would, 877-93-FAITH. You can always connect through our website, which is myfaithradio.com. By the way, you have to forgive me. I've got a pretty bad cold today, so if my voice sounds like an octave lower than usual, that's why. I've been taking some Sudafed trying to make it through the morning, but that's why I don't sound like my usual self. Well, my guest this hour is Dr. Linda Soley. She's a licensed psychologist. She's been specializing in issues of depression and anxiety for nearly 30 years. Linda began her practice as a hospital staff psychologist working with children and adults, and she's been in private practice for more than two decades. She speaks nationwide at churches and retreats, and she makes her home right here in the Twin Cities. Today, she joins us to talk about her new book, Take Charge of Your Emotions. And Linda, welcome to Faith Radio.
Thanks for having me on your program, Bill.
It's a real blessing to have you. And before we mention get into the book, I want to mention you have a book signing coming up on this particular book at the Lifeway Christian Bookstore in Burnsville. And that's happening in a couple of weeks on March 15th. So if you live anywhere in the Burnsville area and you'd like to meet Linda, and will you even autograph a book for them?
I'd be very happy to.
Oh, that'd be great.
The book signing's going to start around 1 o'clock.
Okay, right after lunch on March 15th, put that on your calendar. If you're anywhere within driving distance of Burnsville, come on out and meet Linda and buy a copy of her new book. Sorry, I wanted to give a commercial plug there for you.
Thanks for doing that.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, Linda, first of all, tell us a little more about your practice and your speaking ministry, if you would.
Sure. I actually started out as a high school English teacher and got laid off with declining enrollment. And then I went to the University of Minnesota and earned a master's and a PhD in counseling psychology and began my practice as a hospital staff psychologist at North Memorial Medical Center. Mm. And I was there for 3 years. And then started a solo practice 24 years ago now. And in my practice, I work primarily with depression, anxiety issues, and marriage counseling. For 7 years, I did marriage counseling for executives at a big Twin Cities company.
That's interesting. And I'm sure there are a lot of executives that could use marriage counseling with workaholism and some of the stresses that come with being in leadership positions in a big corporation.
That's right. And then I also have spoken at retreats around the country, and I even spoke in Lithuania at the Lithuanian Christian College, the only Christian liberal arts college in the former Soviet Union, and did lectures there and at some churches in Lithuania, too, in 2012, and that was a wonderful experience.
Now, let me ask you, why Lithuania? Are you Lithuanian by ancestry?
I am not Lithuanian, but I had a friend who was the chair of the board of that school, and she told me, I did not realize that Lithuania had the highest suicide rate in the world.
Mm.
And she asked me to come over there and speak and arranged all of these talks for me to speak to the depression in that country.
Mm. You know, it's interesting you mentioned Lithuania. I have some friends who are Lithuanian, and back when I was first starting my educational journey, I was in a marriage and family master's program, and we had to pick some type of ethnic group and do a report on their family dynamics and their culture. And everybody else was picking things like, Mexican or Hispanic. This was in Southern California. Some, might have been choosing European. And I just thought, well, why not talk to my Lithuanian friends? And they connected me with a large Lithuanian church in Los Angeles. And I had a chance to go out and meet with the, I guess they'd call them priests, and also go to one of their Lithuanian festivals with all the dancing and the food and the music. And boy, it was an amazing experience. But I had no idea. I mean, I guess I'm not surprised, being it's a former Soviet bloc country, that they have this huge problem with suicide, and I'm sure alcoholism, and many of those countries. Gosh, I've been watching the Olympics, and it's kind of painting a very positive picture of Russia. Obviously, it's a beautiful area by the Black Sea. It's a resort area. But anyone who has been to the former Soviet Union or those countries know that there are just so many people living in darkness and despair, and so many children who are just in terrible situations. And man, oh man. So what was that like for you? Did you get a chance to, obviously you were working with Christian students. I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong, you probably heard some horror stories.
I heard a lot of horror stories, and I met one pastor who was arrested twice by the KGB and interrogated by them, and he was just like in his mid-40s. Hmm. So this is not ancient history. And there still was a feel of, I would say that the people, many of them are still kind of experiencing post-traumatic stress for what they went through during the Soviet times. And I also went through the former KGB headquarters in the capital of Lithuania. It's the only KGB headquarters that's been turned into a museum of all of the former Soviet republics. And I saw the execution chamber where Christians were executed if they would not renounce their faith. And it just was palpable, the oppression in that building still.
Gosh, that is just striking. I don't know if you've ever read Chuck Colson's book, The Body, which it's been many years since it came out, but one of the things he talks about in there is what happened in, I think it was either Romania or Bulgaria, I think it was Romania, with Ceausescu and some of the oppression of Christians and the very vibrant Christian community that stood up and in many cases experienced extreme persecutions. That's something all of us can be praying about. I think it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. And again, even watching the Olympics with, oh, there's that beautiful Russia, those mountains, and look at all those skiers. And no, that's a kind of a whitewashed picture of what it's really like. There's just a lot of people hurting there. And I don't mean to, get...
They are, and the people in Ukraine really need our prayers. And I've been thinking about the people in Lithuania right now with this, too, because this is a threat to all of them. And we really do need to keep them in our prayers.
Well, let's do that. Let's encourage all of our listeners to do that this weekend. Think of those folks over in the former Soviet bloc. Excuse me, Linda. Let's jump into your book. First of all, what was your motivation for writing Take Charge of Your Emotions?
Well, through these 30 years of counseling, I have noticed that many people have the sense that their emotions are out of their control, and people feel like they're victims of their emotions. Or that their genetics or their brain chemistry doom them to a life of emotional pain. And that simply is not true. And that was my primary motivator for writing this book. I have developed a very practical skill through the years that I never sat down to make up. It just evolved naturally out of counseling sessions. And I found it to be extremely effective in helping people get to the bottom of problem thinking that creates painful emotion, and then to learn how to turn around that thinking in a true and believable way to produce more desirable feelings and behaviors. And I've helped so many people with this skill that they can independently use through the years, and I wanted to make this available to more people, and that's why I wrote the book.
Now, I should mention the subtitle. The book, again, is called Take Charge of Your Emotions, 7 Steps to Overcoming Depression, Anxiety, and Anger, 3 of probably the most... we can use the word negative, or let's say emotions that impair our functioning. Well, we're talking like psychologists now, aren't we?
Painful emotions.
Yeah, very painful emotions. Now, one of the things I love about the book, Linda, I want to kind of give a commercial for this, is that you really write it from an explicitly Christian perspective. You're very upfront about that. In fact, as I was just looking in the introduction, you have a section, just a little section called Empowered Through Jesus Christ, and you say this: the Christian faith asserts that God exists, that he created the universe, and that he came to earth in the person of Jesus, in part to offer himself as a guide to everyone. Take charge of your emotions, accepts these claims as truth, and explores how a relationship with Jesus provides a solid foundation for emotional health. It enhances well-being by delivering comfort and confidence that penetrate and permeate the soul, guidance on avoiding traps that lead to misery, and hope in the face of life's many challenges. That's beautiful, Linda. And let me ask you, this is a tough question, but can a person be truly emotionally healthy, fully emotionally healthy, without a relationship with Jesus Christ? Man, that's loaded, isn't it?
It is loaded. But I do believe that psychology can only take people so far. Psychology cannot penetrate the soul. Christ can penetrate the soul. And Christ takes us to places and offers us answers that no one else does. Christ offers us a personal relationship with him, and he's our constant companion. And he offers us a hope for the future that, and the truth that this life is not all there is. So even if a person is going through horrible, horrible difficulties in this life, we can use that hope for the future, even of eternity in heaven where there's no suffering and no deprivation, and that can offer us hope. And I just don't see those kind of offerings for mental health apart from Christ.
Now, the flip side of that, and I want to point this out as well, just because a person is a Christian doesn't mean necessarily that they're going to be emotionally healthy. In fact, we have a lot of Christians, unfortunately, through distorted thinking, through the way their environment growing up, through genetics, that really struggle with mental illness. So it's not a panacea, and any church that tells you that you simply, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, but I get a little bit upset when I hear churches say, well, if you just prayed more about it, or if you memorized more scripture, your depression would go away. And I do not believe that's what scripture tells us.
I agree with you entirely. And some people think that they're sinning if they are anxious, if they're depressed, and that it's simply a lack of faith. I don't believe that at all. I believe it's a lack of skills, and that people don't understand that our thinking literally, physiologically creates our emotions, and how we think hugely impacts how we behave, and that there are ways to take charge of our thinking, and that in itself is biblical, where St. Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 10:5, take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. But no, it's too simplistic, and it's putting people on guilt trips to say that if they only had more faith, they wouldn't be suffering emotionally.
And I think
Jesus
that hurts.
Himself suffered too. Look at the night before he died on the cross. He knelt and prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he sweat drops of blood. He was in such agony.
We cannot forget that even our Savior, because he was fully human as well as fully God, experienced those things as well, and experienced grief at the tomb of Lazarus, and experienced anger and certainly righteous indignation towards the Pharisees, and joy and all the full range of human emotions. We're going to take a quick break here, Linda, for our network, and we'll come back on the other side, talk more about the book. Let me encourage our listeners, if you want to read more about the emotions of Jesus, pick up the Gospel of Mark and go through it and look at every situation in which Jesus interacted with people. And then look for the word that describes his feelings. And I think you will find, as Linda said, that our Lord and Savior expressed the full range of human emotions. And so that can be very freeing for all of us. I'm Bill Meyer, and this is the Faith Radio Network. My guest is Dr. Linda Soley, right here from the Twin Cities, the author of the new book, Take Charge of Your Emotions. We'll have more with Linda after this quick break here on Faith Radio.
Here's what's ahead on the next Connecting Faith.
He was a popular Christian recording artist in the 80s and 90s, but his music took on a new depth after the death of his fiancée, the loss of his grandmother, and the departure of a dear friend. On the next Connecting Faith, guest host Bill Arnold talks with recording artist and author Billy Sprague about his life, his music, and his book, Letter to a Grieving Heart, Comfort and Hope for Those Who Hurt.
Listen for Connecting Faith, weekdays at noon on Faith Radio.
Are you struggling to keep up with your fitness plans for the new year? We want to help. Join us for Commit to Live Fit 40-Day Challenge as Susie Larson leads you down a six-week journey of faith and fitness. During these next few weeks, we'll focus on physical and spiritual steps to a healthier life as you commit to live fit. Sign up for free at myfaithradio.com. We start March 3rd. It's not too late to sign up for Commit to Live Fit 40-Day Challenge.
UNWTickets.com, University of Northwestern, St. Paul.
The conversation continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
Hey, welcome back. Our guest is Dr. Linda Soley, a licensed psychologist from the Twin Cities area. She's the author of a new book called Take Charge of Your Emotions. And if you give us a call right now and give us your contact info, we will put you into a drawing for a copy. We have three copies of her book to give away at the end of the hour, but you gotta call us first. And again, give us your name, address, phone number, email address, all that good stuff, and we will take that down. And then maybe you will get a copy of one of these books, perhaps for you or for someone you love who is struggling with depression or anxiety or anger, because those are some of the things that Linda addresses in this book. Now, Linda, let's just do our little basic primer, I guess that's the word, on cognitive behavioral therapy, or at least your form of it that you practice. There are different types of therapy, and I'm guessing many of our listeners have been to see a therapist. There are different theoretical views on how people are best helped. You ascribe to what we call the COGB model, which basically, as you said just before the break, if we have distorted thinking, if we have thinking that's off track, if we can change that, then that thinking then leads to certain feelings, often negative feelings, and we get it stuck in this cycle, and somehow we have to break it. And we don't, it's not like replacing those negative thoughts with false Pollyanna positive thoughts. It's replacing them with realistic thoughts. And it all has to do with what we call self-talk. So if you would, just give us a little basic explanation of how that all works and maybe, again, how it fits in with Scripture.
Sure. The premise of cognitive therapy is that our thoughts or cognitions create our emotions and hugely impact our behaviors. And we constantly interpret life around us. It's kind of like the play-by-play during a football game. And what we're telling ourselves about what we observe around us becomes a habit. We're not choosing it in the moment. When we're in a traffic jam, we don't say, "What should I tell myself about the traffic jam?" We just automatically tell ourselves something like, "I don't have time for this," or whatever. And quite often, the way that we're interpreting life is also subconscious. We're not necessarily tuned into it. But whether or not we're paying attention to how we're interpreting life around us, our thoughts are creating our emotions, and those also hugely impact our behaviors. And so what I've set out to do in this book and what cognitive therapists set out to do, but I have a particular approach to this, I aim to teach people how to identify their thinking that quite often they may not even be aware of, and to look at that and, I say, unravel it, challenge their problem thinking, and then turn it around in a true and believable way that will produce more desirable feelings and behaviors.
Now, you said true and believable, which is key, because that certainly fits with Scripture. And you mentioned the verse from Paul about taking captive every thought. We also have verses about the renewing of our mind and putting on the mind of Christ, which would be, of course, the true mind. And so give me an example, if you would. Maybe you could use a case study, a client example, something that comes to mind, where someone came in and they had this distorted thinking for one reason or another, and what they were thinking, what it led to as far as feelings and behaviors, and then how you worked with them.
Sure. I'll give a very simple example. Let's say that a person was anxious about inviting company over for dinner. The situation that they might be considering would be considering inviting company over for dinner, and their feeling about it might be anxious. May I just go through briefly these seven steps that I use? Because I think that that would be the easiest way to explain this.
Sure.
Okay, so the first step is just describe objectively what is the situation. And then the second step is to identify what you are feeling in that situation. And as I originally said, I didn't sit down to make up seven steps for overcoming emotional pain, but they just evolved in counseling with people. And I noticed in sessions that people would often describe this diffuse, painful emotion that they couldn't get a handle on, and they were quite certain that there was no thinking that created that emotion. They might say, I just get this depression every Sunday night, or I feel stressed in the morning, and there's no self-talk or thought connected to it. But I had this feelings list in my desk drawer, and I pulled it out and showed it to clients, and it has like about 100 feeling words on it, and I would say, look at this. Can you define precisely how you feel? If they were depressed on Sunday night, they might pick more specific words like they felt full of dread or they felt lonely or abandoned. And those really specific feeling words then would guide them to their problem thinking. It would help them get a handle on their thoughts. And so the second step is identify the feelings, the precise feelings. And then the third step is to look at what thinking created those precise feelings. Just as people couldn't get a handle on their feelings, I also noticed through these years of counseling that people would often tell themselves general statements that were problematic, like, I can't stand my job, or my life is boring, or my boss drives me crazy. They would stop right there and then experience the feeling that would follow from that. If a person says my life is boring, they likely feel depressed, and then their behavior might be passive. I started just in one sentence. I hadn't thought of it 1 minute in advance. I just said, because, after one of those general problem statements, and the person had to stop and think. So a person who's afraid to invite company over for dinner might say they might feel intimidated at the thought. They might tell themselves, I can't handle having company over for dinner, and then I would put a because after that, and the person has to stop and think. Now, why can't I handle that instead of simply avoiding having company over for dinner? They might say, the meal might not turn out well, and put another because after that. The meat might be dry. I found that after a while, because doesn't give the most interesting information. If a person said, because after the meat might be dry, they would say, I left it in the oven too long. That's not very interesting. And out of my mouth, I just spewed, which is a problem because. Why is it a problem if the meat's too dry? Then a person has to stop and think. My guest might think I'm a bad cook, which is a problem because they might not respect me, which is a problem because they may no longer want to be my friend. At that point, I would say it's unraveled to the point of being ridiculous. And most of these thoughts can be unraveled until they become ridiculous, and if not, until they just simply repeat themselves. But in that process of unraveling these general problem statements, problem ideas are exposed, and people then need to turn those around and deal with every single concern identified in the problem thinking in a true and believable way.
So what's that next step then? They've identified now, and you mentioned a lot of, you know, good foundational issues that might come up for someone that has that kind of anxiety.
Yes. The fourth step, I'll just say real fast, is write the behavior. And the behavior that corresponds often to anxiety is avoidance. So the person wouldn't invite company over for dinner. But then to turn it around in a true and believable way, which is the fifth step, writing what I call the helpful self-talk. Again, positive thinking for this person who's afraid that their meal would be bad would be, the meal will be great. But no one has that guarantee, not even a top chef. So that would not help a person feel relieved. But a person could say, they could get into problem solving. I can pick something to prepare that I've fixed before that's simple. That would help solve the problem. They can also say, I guess it boils down to pride. The purpose of inviting company over for dinner is not to impress them with my culinary skills, but to enjoy time visiting together. And if the meal doesn't turn out well, because they have to recognize that is a possibility, it won't be the end of the world. Friendships have survived bad food. And so that would be believable self-talk. And that would likely lead to feeling a little more confident. And the behavior, invite company over for dinner, that's the seventh step, writing the behavior that follows from the helpful self-talk.
And then, of course, our hope would be that once they follow through with that, that their experience would teach them that their fears were unjustified and that even if the meat was a little dry, they had a great time with their friends. Their friends were so thankful for them inviting them over. They, you know, strengthened that bond and led to more meals and perhaps the friends inviting them over. And if they hadn't, if they just avoided it altogether, that would never have occurred.
That's right. And avoidance just increases the fear. And something else that I would include in the helpful self-talk for this one is that my confidence does not come from what other people think of me. I'm not going to give other people that kind of power over me. And here's one of these practical places where I would incorporate relationship with Christ, that my worth comes from Christ alone, not what other people think of me. That's very liberating for people to have their worth based on Christ alone. And that's a focus of one of the chapters in my book.
How does a person get to that point where, okay, we have a spiritual relationship with Jesus, but he's not here with us physically in the room. Certainly people, have had experiences where they felt that they've heard his voice or sensed his presence. But by and large, it's more in prayer and meditation through reading his word that we experience that relationship. On the other hand, people may have had very real personal relationships with very hurtful, abusive people in their past that have made them feel worthless and have even used words like to a 3, 4, 5-year-old child, you are worthless. You will never amount to anything. I wish you were never born. And I'd hate to repeat those things because I know there are people right now listening that heard those words. But how can a person overcome those very just deep early wounds with, you know, a more, I guess, for lack of a better word, intellectual belief that they are worthy in God's sight and then he loves them? Because that would seem to be quite a leap.
That would seem to be quite a leap. But I think that you already mentioned reading scripture is huge, reading the Bible. And I urge people to read the Bible because I see that is the primary way that God tells us about what he wants to know, what he wants us to know about him. And I urge people to read the Bible every day, to read like a chapter a day and read straight through books of the Bible. Then we fill our minds more with who God is and what he wants us to know about him. And also, over time, the longer we experience Christ and know more about him, we gain more experience with him, and we experience his truth in it, and we can believe and sense who he is more and sense his love for us. But it takes time, and it takes reading the Bible, and then it also takes challenging these lies that we may have been told when we were younger.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And with writing out these seven steps, for people who have real entrenched issues, I encourage them to write out these seven steps once a day or to spend about a half an hour a day writing out these seven steps for 4 to 6 weeks until they are automatically interpreting life in a helpful way. Because at first, if a person has a deep pain, simply writing out these seven steps once isn't going to permanently change their thinking in a more helpful direction. The more helpful self-talk or more desirable emotions may only last for a couple minutes before the unhelpful intrudes. But research on the brain is showing that when we put forth effort to learn new things, that we can grow new connections in our brain. I used to be apologetic that these seven steps take effort, they take time, but the more I study brain research, the more I think this is actually a good thing, because only through putting forth effort can we grow new connections in our brain, and we can develop habitual ways of thinking that will offer us much more desirable emotions and behaviors, no matter what our history is and no matter what we have suffered in the past.
Let me mention a striking example that I saw a few years ago, and you may be familiar with this research, but I think this was actually on the front page of the LA Times. They had pictures, brain scans, of two different brains. It was a brain of an individual who struggled with obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. And they showed, okay, here's where the brain lights up in these particular areas for the person that struggles with OCD. And then they showed photographs or scans, I believe it was maybe 12 weeks later, of two different individuals. One of those individuals had been treated with medication, and there's medications that actually help very successfully with OCD. And the other individual was treated with cognitive behavioral therapy, such as you're talking about today. What was stunning to me was these two brains, after this 12-week period, were indistinguishable. You could not tell which brain, which person had had the cognitive behavioral therapy and which person had had the medication. And the conclusion from the researchers at the time, and I'm sure there's been more research since on this, but that, wow, we had no idea that talk therapy could actually change the way the brain lights up in these areas. And maybe that's a little simplistic. I know you've probably studied more.
That's the work of Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz. I believe he's at UCLA, a psychiatrist at UCLA. And a lot more research since then has replicated those findings and found more evidence of how our thinking literally affects the anatomy of our brain. And it's very, very exciting and very empowering.
Well, and from a Christian perspective, it's very encouraging as well to know how and how the relationship with relationship, first of all, with God and with His Word, but then with safe, healthy people in our lives, which we'll unpack that in just a bit, too, how that can benefit us. We're going to take a quick break here, Linda. Let me mention the name of the book again. It's called Take Charge of Your Emotions. 7 Steps to Overcoming Depression, Anxiety, and Anger. Linda will be doing a book signing for this book at Lifeway Christian Bookstore in Burnsville on March 15th from 1 to 2 p.m. So you might want to jot that down in your calendar if you're anywhere within driving distance of Burnsville. Again, March 15th, 1 to 2 p.m., Lifeway Christian Bookstore. It's 11:47. I'm Bill Meyer. We'll take a quick break and be back with more here on the Faith Radio Network.
On the next Everyday Relationships.
A listener recently told us that she's involved in a relationship with a Christian man who's still married but has legally been separated for almost 2 years. We also had a parent tell us about their daughter who's dating a boy who is very controlling. You know what? Life leaves us with questions, and we want to help to answer them at 855-2-RELATE.
Everyday Relationships. Real life, real talk. Weekdays at 4 on Faith Radio.
Are you struggling to keep up with your fitness plans for the new year? We want to help. Join us for Commit to Live Fit 40-Day Challenge as Susie Larson leads you down a 6-week journey of faith and fitness. During these next few weeks, we'll focus on physical and spiritual steps to a healthier life as you commit to live fit. Sign up for free at myfaithradio.com. We start March 3rd. It's not too late to sign up for Commit to Live Fit 40-Day Challenge.
Unemployment and underemployment are among the top five global risk factors. Not working, working part-time, or working outside your gifting can really take a toll. David Stark, author of best-selling book, Life Keys, Discover Who You Are, Why You're Here, and What You Do Best, has helped thousands of people over the past 20 years move out of where they are and into a brighter future. David's offering a one-day job-to-career workshop, Saturday, March the 1st, on the campus of University of Northwestern, St. Paul. For more information, visit events on myfaithradio.com.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
Hey, welcome back. Our guest is Dr. Linda Soley. She's a licensed psychologist from the Twin Cities and the author of a new book called Take Charge of Your Emotions. Linda, in the book, you teach people that one of the ways to take charge of their emotions is using three types of relationships. What are those relationships?
Those relationships are the relationship between thoughts, behaviors, and feelings, and we've already been talking about that today, how our thinking hugely affects our feelings and our behavior. And so I teach that skill, the seven-step skill, in that first section of the book. Then the second section of the book looks at a relationship with Christ and looks at having Christ in charge of our thinking, then guiding our behavior and having feelings in the caboose of our train, and the tremendous benefits to mental health that Jesus offers us. The third section of the book looks at relationships with people. Jesus said we are to love our neighbors as ourselves. And there's a chapter on loving ourselves and on loving and having good relationships with other people in the third section of the book. That's vital to mental health. And then the last section of the book takes all of these relationships between thoughts, feelings, and behaviors with Jesus Christ and with people in order to overcome depression, anxiety, anger, and ultimately find joy.
How do we find, let's just talk to the person who's listening today who may say, you know, I have had some pretty bad relationships. I've had people really hurt me, both in my childhood and even as an adult. And I seem to somehow always end up with people who abuse me emotionally, who take advantage of me, who hurt me. How can a person who's had those experiences, first of all, trust, and then how do they go about finding relationships that are good for them?
People who have had history of abusive relationships often do unthinkingly and unknowingly make choices which don't bring them joy or healthy relationships with other people. And it's important, I think, to start with the self and become healthy themselves so that they like who they are, they respect themselves, they see themselves as a child of God's. And with that, they can grow more confidence to draw healthier people into their life and to start slowly sharing little bits with people and seeing how trustworthy those people are to see if they can share more with them. People that they might meet at church or in a Bible study, I think that those can be great places to meet people when you're looking for deep relationships relatively quickly, because people don't necessarily speak deeply at a photography club, even though a photography club can be fantastic. But if people are really lonely, going to a Bible study offers them opportunity to speak at a much deeper level, much sooner with other people.
Any red flags that you would caution that person who really is now willing to take that step of faith and start entering into relationships, maybe finding a new church, finding a Bible study. I know Henry Cloud and John Townsend wrote this book a few years ago called Safe People, which I really appreciate. But do you have any suggestions on how do you evaluate a new relationship to see whether or not it's good for you and something that God would want you to be in?
Well, in order to find a safe relationship, for one thing, people can pray and ask for God's guidance in this, but then take the relationship bit by bit, looking for certain characteristics in a person to see if the person's honest. If you find a person is not speaking truth to you, that they're lying to you, see if they're reliable. Do they follow through and say what they say that they're going to do? Are they able to manage their emotions in a pretty mature way? Can they talk straightforwardly to you about issues that they have with you, or are they going behind your back and gossiping a lot about other people? Those people would not be as safe. People who manage chemicals well would be people who would likely could be safer people to be involved with. They're serious about their Christian faith, reading the Bible, involved at church. But again, not everyone at church is a safe person.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And there are some churches that aren't very safe,
there
too.
There are some churches that are not very safe, too.
We should
absolutely
point that out.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
even seeing other people's choices in friends tells you something about who they are, too.
Yeah, who they hang out with.
Correct.
And Proverbs is very clear about the company we keep and how it can either build us up or tear us down. And I repeat that my 11-year-old son, I often say to him, you know, okay, Joseph, what does Proverbs say? Bad company does what? He goes, corrupts good character, Dad.
So, that's great.
Yeah. Let's just hope when he gets to be a teenager, he remembers that.
Absolutely.
Hey, we've just got about 3 minutes left, and I know we've barely scratched the surface of the book, and I love this book. I want to commend it to our listeners. Again, the title is Take Charge of Your Emotions by Dr. Linda Soley. But tell us briefly, if you would, in just the two or so minutes we have left, about what you're doing with the University of Minnesota and the research on the stress reduction technique you mentioned in the book.
Yes. Well, for over 20 years, I've lectured to doctoral students at the University of Minnesota on how to do cognitive therapy. And when the associate chair of the department heard that I was writing a book, she asked to read it, the manuscript, and she did. And she told me that the stress reduction technique in the book was really impressive. And she said that they were doing research at the University of Minnesota on stress reduction, and she actually thought that this one, that my approach might work even better. So she asked to do research on it. And in 2013, 800 students involved in Intro to Psych at the University of Minnesota and Normandale Community College participated in an online stress management study. And the group that included my stress reduction exercise reported significant reductions in anxiety, depression, stress, rumination, and they had an increased sense of control over their lives. So it was very exciting. And that's a stress reduction technique from the anxiety chapter in the book called The Inside My Control, Outside My Control Exercise.
Can you describe it? And I hate to ask you this. Can you briefly describe it in about 90 seconds?
Yes. You know, it's so much in my book is common sense, but it works. And with this, what people need to do when they are feeling stressed is to identify exactly what they're stressed about, list what is in their control and out of their control that they are stressed about, and get real specific about what they could do about the things that they are stressed about. But this is where my approach, I think, diverged from the university's approach, in that after they've identified what they can do about what they're stressed about, to prioritize, choose exactly what they're going to do from their many options, then prioritize them and write on their calendar exactly when they will do each of the things that they choose to do, so that they only need to focus on their first priority and they can let go of all of the other stressors in their life because they have written on their calendar a plan for how they will do the rest. What is outside of a person's control, as in the book, I say, pray about it and leave it in the hands of God. For the University of Minnesota, I just had to say, let go of it. I wasn't allowed to mention God for that study.
Really?
Yes.
I think we can all understand why. Linda, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate you, and we'll be praying for you as that God will continue to open doors for you and your speaking and your writing. Once again, she's having a book signing at Lifeway Christian Bookstore in Burnsville on March 15th, 1 to 2 p.m., and you can learn more about Linda and that book signing at her website, which is drsolie.com. Linda, thank you for being our guest today and spending an hour with us on your Saturday.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Linda Soley, our guest here on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back next Saturday at 11 a.m. Until then, have a wonderful weekend and stay warm.